Hey, you are now listening to the Graceway Podcast. Let's talk with special guest host Jeff Adams.
Well, hello, everybody, and let's talk. My name is Jeff Adams, and I'm here to talk with Pastor Tim Dunn about this remarkable series that you're doing, Pastor, in 1 John. Man, it's been a blessing to me, and it's been instructive. It's been encouraging. It's been just a lot of things, reaffirming. And so you just finished chapter 4.
Did.
Got another chapter to go.
Yep.
But let's go to chapter 4 for just a second. And for those that are just joining us for the first time, this is kind of like outtakes, or it's kind of like when I was learning communication, one of the metrics that they gave us is a good teacher only teaches about 10% of what they've studied and know.
Yeah, right.
And so that means that what you have shared in this remarkable series represents about 10% of what has gone through your head and heart.
Ideally. Yes.
Ideally. So one of the questions that I'm sure that inquiring minds probably have is, you didn't really touch a lot on verses 1 to 7 in 1 John chapter 4,
right,
which talks about testing spirits and false prophets and false teachers. It didn't quite fit the love theme.
Yeah, right.
And so my question for you today is, what about that portion?
Yeah.
And how does that connect and relate to the rest of the chapter and your emphasis on love? Because really, this was part two for you of the love theme that began in chapter 3. So I get why you skipped over that portion.
Sure.
Because the love is hard to get around love as being a powerful force in 1 John.
Yeah, yeah.
Or any of his writings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Talk to us about that.
And we're doing this a day late here, so we're on a little more casual tip.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You know. Bottoms up here.
Coffee, sweats, all that.
Right.
Yeah, it's good.
That's right. Yeah, so I think that what's interesting about Pastor John is that he does this kind of Socratic, very Asian, circular kind of thing and lets you draw conclusions from some of the principles that he's laid down. So he talks love, 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 false teachers, love, 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 love. And what's so fascinating about that is that when you study what was going on in his church, there was some very specific false teaching that was
absolutely
occurring. Three kind of developed into major heretical philosophies. He references them zero times.
Yeah.
He harps on this spirit of love, this theology of love, this loving theology, and then seems to indicate that if anybody doesn't have these things, call it whatever you want. Call it Gnosticism, just assume that they are preaching false doctrine, or if they aren't, that they will be in short order.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the false teacher thing is very much in the context of John's expectation in the Christian community that there be a visible manifesting of a loving spirit.
Yeah.
And he just kind of throws in, if anyone's not doing this, just assume they're false.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, still really, really instructive, because John very strongly communicates this is the defining issue, not only for the church, but for teachers in the church.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's part of it is just the flow that we were going on. And part of it is I didn't spend a lot of time on it because it's a little bit of a and oh, yeah. When you're reading through the text, John doesn't spend a lot of time on it. He doesn't jump that deep into it. And he doesn't seem to take any pleasure in calling out certain teachings as much as teaching certain principles that you can therefore discern your context and your circumstance through those principles.
Yeah, I find that absolutely fascinating. You and I have both spent time in Asia. We have Asian relationships.
Yeah.
We've read about culture, and that's something that is interest to both of us,
yeah,
especially for you as pastor of a multicultural church.
Indeed, yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, Asians sometimes talk about what is in the wind.
Yeah.
And how you communicate non-verbally,
yes,
even in a verbal context.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what I think is so distinctive about John in particular, whereas Paul is writing as a person from Asia,
yeah.
which he definitely was,
right.
But yet he is certainly more, I would say, Western in the influence of his writing.
He is, absolutely.
Influenced by the Greeks, by the Romans, and John is much more purely Asian.
Yes, very much.
And so I love what you just said about that, how he never directly attacks the heresy,
right,
but he establishes the truth.
Yeah.
And just, he'll drop in those little bombshells like, oh, and by the way, somebody's not doing this, don't listen to what they have to
yeah,
say.
Just assume. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's really brilliant that way. Whereas there are times when you see, I mean, Paul goes so far as to name people.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
That John's not that type of dude.
No.
John's going to put it in the wind, as you say, and let you kind of draw your own conclusions. And it is one of those things, you know, sometimes when something is put right in your face, you can still, you lose peripheral vision. The way John teaches it kind of hits you in the back of the head, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's, I think it's incredibly effective and almost more violent than Paul's method, right?
Yeah.
Because you come to it on your own. And so it's just so fascinating because we really, especially right now in our culture, we're so interested in pointing out where people are wrong.
Yeah, I was just, that's exactly what I was going to ask you. I'm just wondering if there's an application there for us because everybody is in everybody else's face.
Right, right.
And if you don't agree with everything, you're absolutely a heretic, you're wrong,
right.
You're demon-possessed, all that type of stuff. And I'm wondering if we could use in our society, and especially in our churches today, a little bit more of John's influence.
Yeah.
Where you just say, look, these are the big things.
Yeah.
Hold to this, and anything else, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But I think Western people, as we read the Bible, we trip up so many times because we want everything to be linear, sequential. And so we come to a passage like that first part of chapter 4. It's like, wait.
Yeah.
How does this fit?
Right.
Well, if you would have been paying attention from the start, you may have noticed.
Yeah, absolutely. And the grace that you know, you think about John's posture in how he holds his theology. You know, John would have certainly had very strong opinions about the heresies that were being represented in his church. He was a brilliant man, would have been able to kind of undress the false teaching very simply.
Yeah.
And he refuses to do it.
Yeah.
And it the discipline, the tact, the wisdom, the rhetoric that he uses is just, I think, especially in this time where everybody has a platform and everyone has a voice and everyone's looking for a kill shot, I think he's a very instructive leader for the church in times of conflict.
Since we're in kind of a cultural frame here, you said something else that you did deal with Sunday, and you talked about cultural differences between what we call today a shame honor society and then our Western world,
right.
Which in our part of the Western world, we're more of a guilt innocence type of thing.
Right.
And you were pointing out how sin provokes shame in us, and then shame results in a distancing that takes place.
Yeah.
And as students of culture, we know that no culture is purely this or purely that. But what would you say as a pastor, speaking pastorally to the people in your flock and those that are listening to us today, how can we better understand as Westerners the place of shame? Because we don't talk about that.
We don't. Well, I think, you know, I try to do this Sunday, just the acknowledgement that the Bible is not an American document. None of it is. It in some ways is kind of antithetical to the way that we view the world. And so I think first coming to the Bible with greater humility, greater awareness that I'm bringing my own presuppositions to it. I'm reading my own bias and theology into it sometimes. And then secondly, That whole shame honor is such a relational, it's such a relational context. All of these parts of the world that are predominantly shame honor are also highly familial, highly relational, highly maintaining the family name, all of those kind of things.
Yeah.
And I think that in the Western world, as we have shaken some of those things out of our theology, we have missed some things.
Yeah,
I talked about this a good amount, that are front and center in the Bible.
You know, it was interesting. I read a book on culture a number of years ago, and the author had done some research, and he was looking in Western theology books. And at that particular time, he could not find any that even had a topic for shame.
Right.
But yet there were plenty of instances of dealing with guilt and law.
Yeah.
And basically, guilt and innocence tends to put us in a legal framework.
Right.
Whereas you point out the shame and honor is more of a relational thing.
Right, right.
And I think that's where we sometimes trip up in the Western world.
Yeah, and I think we love Romans. We love Paul because of what you said earlier, that Paul has a Western slant. At least we perceive it that way in the way that he articulates things.
Okay, so let me stop you right there, because you said something else that was good, and this is an appalling sense.
Yeah, sure.
But you pointed out how condemnation pulls us away from the gospel.
Right, right.
And you talked about that, and when we get into that legalistic frame of mind, the condemnation just oozes out.
Yes.
And it's destructive. And to me, the highlight of the book of Romans, to me, the moment where the orchestra swells to the pitch, right, and the timpani's pounding, is when Paul opens Romans 8 and he says, there is therefore now no condemnation to those who are in Christ Jesus.
Yeah.
What's the connection there? What was going through your mind Sunday as you talked about the condemnation aspect?
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite texts in all of the Bible is actually Luke 15, which is a really kind of interesting, the way that the father deals with the prodigal. And that's another one, you know, for years and years, as reading it as an American.
And you can't understand it without understanding guilt and or shame and honor.
You can't understand it without understanding shame and honor. And so, you know, I think, again, the power of the gospel being God paying the price to restore, in some sense, to restore our honor, using his own son to do it with the intent of wrapping us back into the family. Those are really powerful themes that we believe them, but we don't feel them, right? The right wrong thing, the guilt innocence thing, still has some type of formality to it. Mm-hmm. The shame honor, coming home for free, dad already paid for it. There's an embrace in that isn't as much felt, at least for me. And okay, now you're innocent. Okay, well great, but are we good? Am I close? Am I welcome?
I forgave you, not enough.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, now get back to work.
Right, exactly.
I think that's how a lot of us perceive the gospel. And you hear that come out in, you know, God saved me by his grace, and now I need to work to be moral, work to be innocent, work to be good. And that is a very Western frame, right? That is less prevalent in some of those shame honor spaces. So yeah, when Paul says that, I agree. That's the jackhammer of the book. And it's so fascinating then that we kind of gloss over that and argue about Romans 9 and Calvinism and Arminianism.
Exactly.
Yeah, very American practice.
Yeah, we tend to put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
We sure do.
Yeah. And so which leads me to another thing. When I listen to you teach whatever it is, and I'm thinking about what are we going to be talking about, sometimes what strikes me are statements that I hear you make that hit me, like that statement by Paul in Romans 8, like, whoa, this is huge.
Yeah.
And so when I hear those things, those are the things that I want to say, hey, Pastor Tim, listen, could you kind of work this again? Because I want to make sure that everybody picked this up. And one of the things that I heard you say in this particular study was when you said, we rarely doubt our doubts or fact check our fears.
Yeah.
That was huge to me.
Sure.
Can you make sure that nobody misses that or glosses over it, as you said a moment ago?
Well, you know, and I'll be entirely honest that my presumption is that John makes these statements about us being able to know the love of God through the provision of his son and the provision of his spirit, these high theological concepts. And then he kind of comes back and does this, so we know and believe, and he does this perfect love casts out fear, which pastorally to me feels like, I still don't think you got it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that word know means to understand, that word believe means to trust. And I unpacked, you know, I know about gravity, I also trust it, and I plan accordingly. I don't jump off of high places, you know?
Yeah.
And I think what's important about what John is getting there is just whether or not we're going to believe what we know or believe what we feel when it comes to God, when it comes to what God says is true and our experience with him. And I think he does a masterful job at kind of getting at the difference between understanding and trusting, getting at how our fears play more of a part in our relationship to God than we think, how our doubts play more of a relationship to God than we think, and kind of allows us to put those on the table.
Yeah, and yeah. As I read ahead, as you've encouraged us to do in 1 John, it seems like all of that comes to a climatic head in chapter 5.
Absolutely.
Where that knowing, that is understanding.
Yes.
It's not just a blind faith.
Right, correct.
But it is a faith that is produced because I know I get it.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I know it's part of who I am, and I can plan accordingly.
Yeah.
I think that's a big piece. The trust piece is that promise I can depend on.
Right.
Right. And that's why I talked about gravity. You know, I don't really understand gravity, but I trust it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And I don't think we always understand the width, the depth, the breadth of God's love for us.
Right.
But I think what's different is because I don't understand it, I don't feel like I can trust it. And John's saying, no, trust it in a planned reception of it. Because if you can't receive God's love, you can't give God's love.
That was exactly where I was going, because that's another one of those statements that you made.
Sure.
That I think is so important. We can't give what we haven't received.
Sure.
And you said something just a moment ago that was, I think, very important, where you talk about the fact that, yeah, we can't totally understand the width and the breadth of all of this of God's love. And I think that's one of the underlying messages of Scripture.
Agreed.
Book of Job, for example.
Yeah.
You can have all your little doctrinal truths lined up like ducks in a row.
Right.
But you're never going to understand the fullness of God.
Yeah.
Period.
You wrote a book on it. So if you're
saying, thank you. Okay.
And for 4 easy payments, I'm just kidding.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, you wrote a great book on it. But yeah, that's a great example of, wait, what? How am I supposed to process this? And I think again, because we are so intellectually minded in the West, we think that if I can't process it, I can't trust it.
Yeah.
And that's a dangerous spot to be as a Christian.
Yeah, it just seems like we're kind of living that with the COVID and vaccines and masks and all that type of stuff. You know,
No
matter what you believe, you can find somebody on the internet that believes the same thing.
Absolutely can, yeah.
And because we don't understand it, then we can't trust anything.
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
We're dying.
That's right. And so we're dying. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're dependent on CEOs of pillow companies, you know, to give us medical advice.
God help us.
God help us.
Yeah, but we'll get a good night's sleep before we die.
That's right.
Oh,
right.
My.
That's right.
That's not meant as a political statement.
No.
It's just,
no.
It's a commentary on the way that we process information in the West.
It is.
I think it's a call, and you come back to this so often, and I really appreciate this about you. My job is not to tell you what to believe. My job is to help you think biblically.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Part of thinking biblically is understanding you can't understand it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but... But you can also trust what you don't understand, which
exactly.
For an American, that's a very hard thing to get our head around.
It truly is.
Yeah.
And that's nobody's fault.
No.
It's just the way that it is.
It is.
And Eastern philosophies and worldviews have their weaknesses as well.
They do.
It's just understanding, which, by the way, is one of the blessings, I think, of a church like Graceway, where you have people from so many different backgrounds that come together, and in synergy, we learn from each other.
Absolutely. Yeah, the amount of times that I will tap on something like shame, honor, guilt, innocence, or fear, power, like I did on Sunday, and somebody from one of those contexts will come up to me, you know, and further educate me or affirm what I said is really, really a blessing. But, you know, we have those things kind of at our relational fingertips here at this church. But again, as we talked before, really want people to lean into that here and be a little bit more loving with their theology, a little bit more open, not open flimsy, open humble, be more easily taught and a little less kind of head-based and a little more faith-based.
It seems like we put ourselves in an either-or position.
We do.
And most choices in life are neither either-or.
Yeah.
And in fact, what I do in strategic planning now, I talk about the importance of gaining perspective before you plan, which is an Asian concept.
It is, yeah.
But then the other side of that, we now have some very effective vaccines, the most effective in history, because the previous administration said, we're going to throw everything that we have at this, all the money and people that we can.
Yeah.
And that's a very Western perspective.
Yeah.
And it was very needed.
And very needed, yeah.
And so it's neither the either or, but it's like, what can we learn from each other? How can we work together to have a deeper understanding and better relationships?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's good.
What else is on your heart if you were to say, okay, I wish I could have said this Sunday, what would be the thing that you would add? had more time, I would do this, I would say that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we'll get to this in chapter five, you'll get to this in chapter five, but, you know, this is, speaking of the crescendo of the orchestra, this whole love, loving theology, love amongst us, the reception of love and the sharing of love, it's really John's, it's really the point of the whole book. And I think the last 18 to 24 months has really undressed us in regards to our actual belief and practices around this thing. And I don't mean us, you, I mean us, me.
Yeah.
I've been so convicted by John's grace, by John's wisdom, by John's openness, by John's humility, what he didn't engage with,
yeah,
what he emphasized, and how difficult it is to do it. You know,
yeah.
We have both heard preachers kind of condescend to love as kind of the simple, the shallow, the you know, the not the deep parts of our faith. And I think that John is saying not only is it the deepest part of our faith, but it's the hardest part of our faith,
yeah,
when properly understood. And so, you know, I would love our church to take up the commitment of growing in this exercise of receiving the love of God and sharing the love of God. And I think that that commitment would serve us well, you know, when the next season like this comes around.
And there will be.
And there will be.
Whether it's, yeah, a disease or whatever, a natural, yeah, disaster, it always comes around.
It always comes around. I think the church was really unprepared around this topic. And I think it showed up on social media. It showed up from some pulpits and those kind of things. And I would just like us to be more prepared next time.
Well, it kind of takes us back to what we were talking about last week, where John has these two large buckets, and only two.
Only two.
There's hate and love.
Yeah.
And you're in one or the other.
Yeah.
That is a time where there's no gray in the middle.
That's right. Yeah.
It's either love or it's hate. And the way that you defined hate, which ultimately comes from John,
yeah,
which ultimately comes from God,
right,
is so different than the way that we categorize that today. And we think of, well, you know, I don't like you, but I don't hate you.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't understand that. And I think then we apply that to love. Like,
yeah,
well, I really do like you.
Yes.
Isn't that good enough?
Yes.
And
yeah,
I think what I hear you calling us to is a greater commitment to avoid hate,
yeah,
and to understand it and to go all in with love.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, yeah. Pastor Tim, you have what I call Preacher's Monday voice.
I do.
I recognize that because,
yeah,
I've experienced that many times.
Yeah.
You preach your heart out on Sunday, and then on Monday you're nursing your coffee or
get
your tea.
Get the hat on because,
yeah,
the
so I just want to clarify, this is not smoker's voice that you have. This is called Preacher's Voice,
this
right?
Monday morning
preacher. So I
voice.
Think we probably worked this about as much as we can.
We did.
But, man, thank you so much for all that you're sharing with us from 1 John, and we'll look forward to what we're going to learn next
Sounds
week.
Good. Sounds good.
Thanks for tuning into the Graceway Experience. Hope we can talk again sometime.